This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
The BFM Breakfast Grill, connecting you to the top people and ideas. Presented by U Mobile.
I'm Wong Xiaoning, and this is The Breakfast Grill. Bursa Malaysia, one of the largest bursas in ASEAN with more than 900 companies listed with a total market capitalization of 1.8 trillion ringgit. But will the rise of economies like Indonesia and Vietnam eclipse our stock market? And what is its future? Questions we pose to Datuk Muhammad Umar Swift, CEO of Bursa Malaysia. Now, thank you for coming on The Breakfast Grill. 2020. Unfortunately, it was not a good year for many businesses. But for stock markets, was a brilliant one, one of the winners in this post-COVID-19 pandemic era. For example, on Bursa Malaysia, average daily value surged 114% to 4.1 billion from about 1.9 billion in 2019. While for 9 months, Bursa achieved a record profit of 273 million, almost 100% higher than that same period last year. So do you think Bursa, as a listed entity, can continue this outperformance in 2021 or have earnings peaked?
Thank you for having me on this morning, Xiaoning. Now, as I've often said to my listed companies, can we talk about what we anticipate? Probably not. Now, when we look at the performance of the exchange over the past 12 months, it reflects the market. And the market has been driven by certain volatilities, domestic as well as foreign. So as we then look into 2021, some of these volatilities remain. That will be reflected in our earnings, of course.
But do you think it's going to be a challenge to kind of maintain that kind of market velocity? I mean, if you look at it just velocity perspective, it's up like 62% on a year-to-date basis. Because when you think about it, market sentiment and trading volume, which is what you benefit from, is perhaps not within your control, but yet so has a great role in terms of delivering your profit numbers.
Could not agree more. We work very hard to make sure investors are confident and provide a conducive environment, infrastructure, price messaging, information availability to ensure that confidence is there so that velocity and that investor confidence remains. I mean, 2020, really, where did this growth come from? And I think when we think about how low the FBM KLCI became, it was around about 1219 in March at its lowest point. And we finished the year at approximately 1627. So there was a whole growth spurt. And that was the call to action. Now, that call to action, so you had a whole new group of investors who we'd not seen before on the exchange, came back to the market, and they found investing painlessly.
Yeah, exactly. I think 2020 was the year of the retail investors. It's not just Malaysia, but a global phenomenon. And Bursa retailers accounted for 46% of total equity volumes last year, and 78% of these retail trades are done online. Now, how is Bursa ultimately going to sustain this momentum? You might not be able to tell me what kind of profit you're expecting in 2021, but at least how are you going to encourage these investors to continue to participate in the market? And it's not just a flash in the pan, because now most of us have gone back to work and the loan moratorium has, for example, ended.
There's been a lot of suggestions that, was it the loan moratorium that provided liquidity? Where's the liquidity come from? Is it a reallocation of assets? Now, we have seen trading levels remain. Now, of course, we peaked at 10 billion value in a day, and we're coming down. So this is healthy. We talk about what are healthy levels.
And importantly, what's the average like for the whole year, right?
Of course. Yeah. And so it's about, again, and not, of course, directly answering the question. It's about really just providing the information and the conducive environment that allows investors to invest. Now, the exchange is an interesting beast. We're listed, so we're for profit, but we have three key pillars. We run the market, needs to be fair and orderly. We need to develop the market, and we need to make profit. Then we overlay that. We're actually the regulator as well, frontline regulator, and we're a government agency. And a PLC.
A lot of hats. Yeah, exactly.
And so I think the key that we look at is how do we discharge our responsibility. So one piece I'm looking forward as to how do we together build the market with the participants in the market and the various stakeholders. The other piece is looking at what can be done to bring in. So the market is only as good as your offering. And when I look at the offering and the product, it's my 900 PLCs. And so we're reaching out and working with the PLCs. So there's the thematic piece around ESG. I mean, because Malaysia, to be frank, is a smaller market compared to the US and Europe and so on. As we see Vietnam growing, larger populations, and of course when you talk about large populations, domestic consumption, we have to also acknowledge Indonesia. So what will be our place in this overall sphere? We performed very well last year. So we need to focus around, in our mind, Islamic leadership, thought leadership, and Sharia-compliant products. And that's why we are focusing on Bursa I. And there's another piece also around ESG. I think it's very key. We've seen a call to sustainability through the pandemic. And within the region, there's some talk about it. But I think when we look at our peer exchanges, it is our intention to take the lead.
One interesting facet, integrity, and related to that integrity is this concept of protecting or protection, right? It's another cornerstone of the exchange. Now, it's in somewhat related to the retail investor because before year end, the SC did issue this guidance note on provision of investment advice, a warning of unlicensed investment advisors. Now, I want to know, how do you balance as an exchange and also somewhat as a regulator to encourage retailers to put money into the market, you know, buy stocks themselves? But most of them have been, in the last few months, been advised through blogs, social media, postings, you know, and these individuals who do these postings aren't necessarily licensed. So how do you ensure that there is investor education out there and it's the right kind, but yet not dampen market velocity?
The key thing when we look at, we've been pushing investor education for many years. So it is your best protection knowledge. So we have Bursa Academy, online learning. We also work with our stockbrokers and provide avenues for learning as well.
But how then do you still ultimately protect these, you know, let's say the retail investor who isn't so savvy? It's not the likes of your Co-op or EPF or even the insurance guys, right, who are professionals. How do we, you know, how do you reach out to them and say, okay, this is how you should look at the stock market, how you should look at stocks? You know, and then not tell them, you know, don't rely on these unlicensed investment advisors.
So what we have is what we're doing today. It's a call to action. Please be mindful. Please prepare yourself. Ask the right question. Now, we want to provide confidence to exchange. So we actually filter every trade, Shining. So we were looking for inappropriate behaviour, people who are acting concerned, those things we talk about. And so we know who's trading, how they're trading. Now, and it's all about, so we'll have, you know, we'll be discussing with the compliance officer of stockbrokers behaviour we don't think is appropriate. It gets escalated. And, I mean, those blogs that you touched on, we joined them under pseudonyms. The blog writers work out who we are and kick us out. And what we're really doing is we're always looking for misinformation. And so you will see Bursa querying companies regarding their announcements or their statements in the press and say, can you please clarify, do you have the capacity to do this? Why are you making this announcement?
Which is exactly the point recently because, you know, as we know, with COVID-19, it pays to be in healthcare. It pays to manufacture gloves. It pays to make PPE or to be involved in the vaccine. And we have a lot of different companies making all these announcements whereby they say they're having a memorandum of understanding, which doesn't actually amount to very much at the end of the day. Does Bursa plan to prevent these exaggerated claims of future earnings? I mean, how do we avoid this? Sometimes, which to me looks like maybe a pump and dump scheme.
Well, there are two elements. One is the call to action, which is clearly an announcement that lacks clarity. It's not purely objective. And we will engage the company immediately and ask for clarification.
Especially if it's not part of their core earnings or
well,
core business.
I mean, you'll see statements that, oh, we are now moving into vaccine distribution. The question we would ask is, do you have the ability to, you know, Pfizer's at minus 70°C, can you do it? Why are you making this statement? So that kind of engagement, just to, if you like, take the frothiness out, for want of a better term, and then we'll see whether the, I think what you're alluding to is when you see a statement by company X, which is then picked up by blog Y, we will then engage. And once or twice we've actually queried the blogs and said, well, why are you making this statement? And we've seen after querying the company, the statement gets removed miraculously.
It's related to this is this concept of the speed and increase of public enforcement actions against these, I would call them errant market participants, be it the company, be it a blog. And sometimes it's, of course, market manipulation or even failing to do the reporting on time. But the issue I have with that is, do you think as Bursa, you know, there's some criticism is in terms of the speed that you do it and the fines that you hand out. Could it be faster? Could it be more punitive?
You know, we always take feedback and we welcome it. It's a shared responsibility with the whole investing community. We try and be very balanced. When it comes to the market, we act quite quickly. When we start looking at errant directors and so on, we'll work with our colleagues at SC and we bring it all together. I think the key thing is on information is making sure that we query and we get the right information out, Shaoning.
Because, you know, one of the things I've observed, and I looked at some of the past fines that you've kind of enforced. So I'll give an example of this company, X Holdings, let's not name them. They had six directors, they didn't issue the company's annual report on time for 2018. So you fine them 375,000 ringgit. But the outcome was only announced like 2 years later. Couldn't this be faster? Because if you know that your regulator / exchange is watching and moves quickly, doesn't that in a way reinforce confidence in the integrity of the exchange?
Two things. We try and build it right. If you like, crime and punishment is when it's not worked. And there's due natural process of appeal and so on. We have an appeals committee which is separate from us, that is independent, and we allow that process to run. So, yes, we would like it to be faster, but natural justice would prescribe that those that have been, tapped on the shoulder, for want of a better term, or been found to be errant, there's a case to prove and they have the right to defend, and we allow it the full appeal process. 24 months, if you were going to a civil court or a criminal court, I think 24 months is probably not too bad.
On the breakfast grill in the hot seat this morning is Dato' Muhammad Umar Swith, CEO of Bursa Malaysia. When we come back, is the exchange ready for the future? And is there an inherent conflict of interest in its structure? BFM 89.9.
You are listening to the BFM Breakfast Grill, brought to you by U Mobile.
BFM 89.9, welcome back to the Breakfast Grill. And this morning, we are speaking to Dato' Muhammad Umar Swith, CEO of Bursa Malaysia. Just before the break, we were discussing whether Bursa can break the record profits it achieved in 2020, and does it move fast enough with its public enforcement actions to reinforce confidence in equity markets. Now, I think for domestic funds, it's a captive audience to Bursa Malaysia. But to me, what is a worrying trend is the foreign institutional shareholders, because what I see is them being the next engine to drive velocity. So foreign shareholding now, less than 21%, I think close to the all-time low of 20.3% that we saw in 2009. Now, I want to know, as an exchange, what can be done to attract these investors?
Investors want growth, dividends, profit. I think the key is also our offerings. So one of the pieces we're quite interested in is working with listed cos to improve profitability. We had the GLC transformation going back a number of years.
Which some would have said it stalled.
Probably not unfair if we look at our earnings. And so there's a call to action there clearly. But I think it's much broader. Let's not just focus on GLCs. Let us as a market look at our profitability. So you have a governance overlay, you have a ESG overlay. So we now start talking about sustainability. And I think that more importantly, we are banks, construction. I mean, we've been accused of being old economy. We need new economy offerings.
Yeah, it's true, because we don't have that many, I would say, new tech, right?
And so that's something we're looking at. And the conversation is, well, how do you make Malaysia a conducive place? And the conversations we've had with some of our larger institutional investors is, let's position Malaysia as the gateway to ASEAN. We don't have the population to drive domestic consumption, but we have good laws, We have a number of different languages. We have a conducive environment for investing. More importantly, we have investors with deep pockets and, in fact, longer arms who are ready to deploy capital and support such businesses.
But what then do you think could be a solution? For me, one of it is maybe creating a niche like what you alluded to for Bursa Malaysia. So I think the reality is we can't expect to regain that status we had in the 1990s where we were one of the largest markets in Asia. I mean, that's a function of the fact that our FBM KLCI weighting on the MSCI Emerging Markets Index has been reducing significantly over the last few years thanks to China. But what could be our niche? For example, Singapore, they see themselves as a global centre for REIT listings. What can we do differently?
I think Malaysia has always enjoyed leadership in the Sharia Islamic space, Sharia compliant. And I think that's something that we need to drive as an offering. At the exchange, it's something we take. We actually are looking at different products. We have a Wakaf ETF we're working on just to test the market and actually show things can be done. So the Wakaf ETF is an interesting piece. I'm quite excited about it. So what we have a lot of Wakaf land that is not being deployed and used. It's sitting with Wakaf. We engaging stakeholders with a view to bringing capital to marry with, if you like, these underutilized assets and then provide a yield on it that goes back into the community. And as we show leadership in this space, and it'll also grow, and we bring a call to action to us. Now, if we can have that, and we also then overlay some new age or new economy companies, I think we'll do quite nicely.
Now, I want to come back to this discussion on the importance of an integrity of an exchange. Now, the key to attract all players, so, you know, the investors, intermediaries, and also the companies to list, and one facet of that is a system that is fail-proof, fair, and transparent. But yet, in the last 15 months, Bursa has had two system failures, December 19, 2019, and again on the 16th of July. So what steps have been taken to avoid this?
Thank you, Xiaoning.
I mean, it's an issue taken very seriously. After all, I don't need to remind you the CEO of Tokyo Stock Exchange resigned when there was only one day system failure last October.
Well, we didn't.
You didn't have a full day, but it is a serious matter.
Of course it is. I think the key is one, we apologise. Two, it is something we work very hard to ensure doesn't happen again. The volumes we saw were unanticipated. Now, we don't say that's an excuse. That's just a fact. We now ensure that the system did not perform the way it was meant to perform. We've addressed those matters to make sure it doesn't happen again. More importantly, we're investing more and ensuring that the underlying systems are robust and do what they need to do.
But it's because when I look at your third quarter results, your slides, it seems this year you're only spending 37 million ringgit on IT. Is that enough to future-proof the exchange and I think allow for what will be increasing amounts of high-frequency trading?
I think the key thing to look at it when we ask that capacity. So where is the capacity constraint? It'll be around the matching engine, bearing in mind it is we are reliant also on our POs for the order management system. Now, I think when you look at the spend on IT, that's P&L. It's not cash flow. Mm. So as we invest, it goes onto balance sheet, doesn't go straight to P&L. And so we are quietly investing and doing what we need to do. And more importantly, you're bringing a whole community with you on a journey. So it's done in a methodical manner. The analogy I would use is we're effectively changing the tyres on a wheel while the wheel is going around. And so we're very, very careful.
And let's spend some time on listings. Because last year, I think there were 18 new listings until probably October 2020 period. It raised total funds of close to 6 billion ringgit compared to 30 new listings the year before, which raised 6.66 billion. So what are your expectations this year? Is it going to be a better year?
It will have to be a better year.
What will be driving that better year, though? I mean, how do you make Malaysia a destination for listings?
Well, no, I think two things. Listings are primarily domestic at this point in time. We have a number of listings in 2020 that will flow through to 2021. And we have a number of new listings that were not previously on the cards coming in 2021 because the market is receptive. We have a lot of pent-up demand, but we have investors looking to deploy capital. We have yields are low in fixed income. Where do you deploy capital? Naturally, you will deploy into different asset classes. Now, is that asset class going to be real estate? Potentially. But realistically, it will be the stock market if offerings are at the right price, providing the right yield. And that's what we're aiming to do.
But at the same time, you do have some Malaysian companies who opt to do dual listings, right, for this so-called better exposure. Doesn't that say something about Bursa Malaysia or Malaysia in general as an investing destination?
If you actually look at the performance of dual listed companies, they outperform at home.
Okay, but the issue related to this is, of course, the fight between raising capital privately or publicly. And yes, you're right, interest rates are all-time low. Money in the bank earns practically nothing. But I think in the past, businesses had fewer options. Today, you've got the rise of private equity and you've even got crowdfunding as viable alternatives. How do you compete with that? I mean, is that going to ultimately, in a way, like end up with fewer and fewer listings over time?
No. Shanning, we don't compete. We see capital as a continuum. I welcome P2P. I welcome venture cap. Because as companies grow, yes, they may compete with Leap, they may compete with Ace, but it's all about the virtuous cycle. Capital gets deployed, it creates growth, it creates jobs, pays tax. The market is big enough. And when you have a very large offering or a very large, for example, when you have a large VC fund deploying capital, they have to have an exit. So the exit's either a trade sale or a listing. They always come back.
Okay, I'm going to hold you to that, whether they do eventually come back. But the other thing I noticed last year is direct listings. Of course, not here, but in the US. So companies like Spotify. Is this something Bursa is prepared to do or ready for?
I think direct listing is going to take a little bit of time. What we're actually doing, and I think we're evolving our whole regulatory structure. There was an announcement by SC Chair in February 2020 that we will be having a regulatory subsidiary. Because bearing in mind we're for profit and there is perceived conflict as regulator. So it's step by step, Shanning. Mm. So as we move forward, we're putting in place the needful so the reg sub becomes a reality.
Yeah, because I always considered this inherent conflict of interest. On one hand, you're supposed to encourage, facilitate capital markets, encourage more listings, encourage more trading. But yet, on the other hand, you have to regulate all the 900 companies. So which one takes precedent?
Both.
Can you balance the two, though? Is that possible at all? Because you're ultimately also still profit-driven.
No. The end of the day, the regulatory process is run by a separate committee, which is RSEC. That will then become RegSub.
Will that happen soon, though? Because there's been talk about it. So is there like a targeted deadline?
We're actually, at this point in time, in our mind, we're looking at first quarter 2021, but perhaps a little bit at the earlier end of the first quarter of 2021.
And one final question. I mean, this is related to Bursa being called to having a higher standard because on some level you're listed, but yet you're a regulator, right? But ironically, SC did sanction Bursa because there were some governance lapses this year. And this was regards to how Bursa was managed, in particular the exercise of executive powers by a non-executive chairman. I mean, is this ironic considering Bursa is not just any company, but one that also regulates other companies and, you know?
Well, I think you're alluding to an article in the press. And from a Bursa perspective, we do not have governance issues. It was quoted in the internal email.
Yes.
So let us say that my previous chairman retired. When I look at what we do at the exchange, we're very careful and it was appropriate.
Okay, on that note, thank you for your time today. On The Breakfast Grill this morning was Dato' Muhammad Umar Swith, CEO of Bursa Malaysia. I'm Wong Xiaoning, BFM 89.9.
The Breakfast Grill is brought to you by U-Mobile, unleashing unlimited potential every day.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, The Business Station.